Welcome to Green and Red, Scrappy Politics for Scrappy People, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the silky smooth sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in San Francisco, California, back from summer vacation. And as always, I am joined by
Bob Bazanko in Niles, Ohio, back from, see, I'm retired, so I don't have to do anything.
Your life is a vacation.
My life is a vacation. Life is a carnival, as the famous Levon Helm said.
Yeah, exactly.
So we often start with a kind of this day in history kind of thing, and we didn't really plan on that, but then something, thankfully, I remembered not long ago. But on the day we're recording this on July 22nd, and on July 22nd, 1946, 79 years ago, a group of Israeli terrorists, the Irgun, blew up the King David Hotel in Jerusalem. And I think it's particularly appropriate to mention that today because what we're seeing in Gaza and the West Bank and really all over the region is a continuation of what Israel has been doing now for almost 8 decades in this particular context. After World War I, the Europeans divided up the old Ottoman Empire and gave these European nations, like the British and the French, mandates over them. Mandates are basically control. They were mandatory systems. And the mandate for Palestine, and remember, it's Palestine, there you know, Israel, went to the British. However, during World War II, and especially because of the Holocaust, there's the significant impetus now for the Zionist project, which I'm sure we all know about, right? And after World War II, you started to see an influx of European Jews, especially, into Palestine. And they wanted the British out. The only thing, the Arabs, the British are an occupying force, and the Arabs didn't get along with them either, right? So the Israelis wanted the British out. Now, the Jewish settlers created a military wing called the Haganah. Offshoots of that were what we would definitely refer to, and were called at the time terrorist groups, one of which was the Irgun, which was led by Menachem Begin, who would later become prime minister of Israel, which would be like making Charlie Manson the president of the United States, which would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? That would never, nothing, we would never get somebody crazy like him as president, like a cult leader who would get people to go out and commit acts of violence on his behalf. No chance. But at any rate.
Has that ever happened before? Has that happened? And then they maybe get pardoned for those acts of violence?
No, nobody would do that. And they would never get away with it. Can you imagine what the media and the opposition party would do if that happened?
Or 1,600 pardons, 1,600 pardons.
Yeah. At any rate, so the Haganah and even more the Irgun wanted the British out. In 1946, the Haganah was working closely with these international groups of Jewish settlers who were coming in. And the British found out about that. They did an undercover operation and they got hold of documents linking Haganah to these terrorist activities. And because of that, Irgun wanted to get that back or to destroy those documents. So on the morning of July 22nd, 1946, they put bombs in a pickup truck that they had hijacked, and they delivered them to the kitchen, which was on the basement of the King David Hotel. King David Hotel was a functioning hotel. It had guests, it had convention rooms and hotel room and whatnot. And in one of the corners, the British mandate authority was headquartered. And so the Irgun brought these bombs in, and Menachem Begin said that the goal was to turn Palestine into a glass house with the entire world looking in. This was planned as a terrorist activity to terrorize the British and to force them out. So that was the purpose. It wasn't, they didn't cover it up like they're doing today. Oh, it's Hamas or it's humanitarianism or whatever, right? So these Irgun operatives go in, they disguise themselves as Arabs, they wore kufiyas, they planted the bombs and it exploded, it blew up. This is probably the first major act of terrorism did at a media audience directed at a public audience, right? It wasn't just to attack a certain individual or group of people who would then be frightened off. It was directed to the entire world, and it succeeded on that level. 91 people were killed. The majority of them had no connection to either the British mandate or any kind of political operatives. I think of the 91 dead, I believe about 30 or so were British and about 20 were Jewish, which is similar to October 7th when, you know, after the initial misinformation that the New York Times and others fed us, we found out that about 400 of those Jewish concert goers that day on October 7th of 2023 were actually killed by the IDF, right? So the King David Hotel bombing is really critical. It's an act of terrorism, open act, a dedicated act of terrorism. And that was the purpose all along. That was the intent all along. And it worked. It worked. The British didn't have that much interest in the area to stay there and risk more bombings and more terrorism and spending more money there. So they got out. And then, you know, what, 2 years later, you have the creation of the State of Israel. Looking way ahead, fast forwarding significantly, you know, what we've seen in the last, what, 20 months is this media narrative about terrorism, which generally focuses on Hamas. And October 7th is seen as like day one, you know, how they call the atomic bombing day one. That's how this particular crisis now is being sold. This is day one. This is when it all began. This, anybody who studied this knows that's preposterous. But with regard to kind of the idea that terrorism is a fully operational idea in what Israel does, what Israel has always done, what it did before it was even Israel, is really critical there. And again, not that we really need the information, or not that anybody who is a hardcore Zionist is going to accept any kind of countervailing evidence. And, you know, it's very clear that we now have mountains of evidence that these terrorist activities, you know, have been going on for about 8 decades. The King David Hotel bombing preceded the Nakba by a little bit, and it led into what we now see as this really, in most ways, uninterrupted attack on Palestinians all over Palestine, in Gaza, in the West Bank. And it also spreads out into Lebanon and Iran and Syria. So Israel as a terrorist force, in this particular case, the Irgun, led by future Prime Minister Menachem Begin, bombed the King David Hotel, killed a significant group of British mandatory officials, British government officials, and it used that as a springboard to get statehood and to begin the eradication of Palestinian culture, Palestinian society, and Palestinian life. It's an important event, and it's worth thinking about today on this 79th anniversary.
Yep. I'm going to segue to the next thing.
Sure.
Thanks for sharing that, Bob. I think that's an important, this day in history, which we actually haven't done in a while. I think it's an important one to mention today, particularly with what's going on today. I'm gonna shift a little bit to a quick note from a sponsor we have. We've never really had a sponsor before, but we are a proud member of the Labor Podcast Network. And so through that, we wanted to share that the Unions Power America sweepstakes is back and happening. And if you sign up for it, you could win up to $40,000 and an epic trip to New York City. To enter, all you have to do is go to unionpowerusa.com and boost your chances of winning with some fun bonus activities. No purchases are necessary. The official rules are at unionpowerusa.com.
Are we allowed to, you know, take a shot at that or buy a lottery ticket or whatever?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, totally. And we'll probably be doing these ads. We'll probably be doing these ads for the next couple of weeks, for the next couple of episodes. The sign up lasts for about 5 weeks.
Cool. UnionPowerUSA.com.
UnionPowerUSA.com. And we'll put it in the show notes as well.
Cool.
And now kind of to get on with like our sort of main topic today, which is topical and related, but also related to what Bob said to a certain extent. And so we've actually been in a news, I would actually say we've been in a news information overload for the last few weeks. I feel like we're like on that all the time, but definitely since the beginning of June, we've really been seeing this sort of information overload around bombing in Iran, the starvation campaign that the Israelis are perpetrating against people in Gaza, the controversy, I guess you could say, that has arisen around the Jeffrey Epstein files. And so we actually want to talk about a certain aspect of that that we have been tracking and noting, which is we're actually starting to see dissident voices within the MAGA movement around each of those three issues. And We find it very interesting. We think it's something to actually look at and peel the onion back a little bit. The most notable voices which have been speaking out on those issues have been Tucker Carlson. Probably the most notable voice has been Tucker Carlson, but also Marjorie Taylor Greene. We've also seen right-wing Manosphere podcaster Joe Rogan speak into related issues. And then other parts of the MAGA influencer world have really been speaking on this. The point where obviously Trump has this sort of emotional stability and the ability to emotionally regulate like a toddler. And so where we've seen Trump lash out at his followers about how they weren't real MAGA supporters because they won't shut up about things like the Epstein files. But we wanted to talk about that a little bit today. And so we're going to go through some of these one by one, but the one I really wanted to kick off with was Tucker Carlson. So Tucker Carlson, very outspoken anti-Israel, anti-Zionist for a long time. He's also very, what you would call an anti-war voice within the conservative movement. Back at the beginning of January, when the war drums were beating for war in Iran, for the U.S. to actually bomb some of the nuclear facilities, Tucker Carlson interviewed Ted Cruz, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, who is no friend of the Green and Red podcast. Kind of took him through the ringer with just some like basic questions. It's like Ted Cruz is a longtime Iran hawk. Tucker Carlson was asked him, what's the main ethnic group that comprises the people of Iran? How many people live in Iran? That sort of thing. Cruz was shockingly unable to answer even some of those basic questions, despite being a senator sitting on various committees which were advocating for war in Iran. And it was a sort of shot across the bow as far as I'm concerned around some of these MAGA voices opposing the war. We also saw Steve Bannon also make a noise about this, as well as Marjorie Taylor Greene.
But it's kind of scary, isn't it? We find ourselves now about 5 or 6 times on the same side of things as Carlson and Greene.
Yeah. And I think it's very interesting because Trump obviously ran on this platform of ending forever wars. In this last election, he actually said he was the anti-war candidate, which I wouldn't actually call him the anti-war candidate, but he was no less. He was like no more. He was no more pro-war than the party that was actually in power. They're probably even more hawkish on Iran and definitely more hawkish as far as like Israel is concerned. And so like Tucker Carlson, who's like a pretty notable media figure, he was the top show on Fox News before they fired him a couple of years ago, really speaking out on this. The other entity which Tucker Carlson really goes after is Israel. Probably, and as far as he's concerned, Iran and Israel, the issues are connected. It's like basically the Israelis are trying to get the U.S. involved in a war in Iran. And that was part of what it seems like that's what part of Netanyahu's strat was like, let's, you know, start this war, we'll get attacked, and then hopefully the U.S. will come in to participate as well. And then the other area, the other sort of topical issue, which has been like the headline of the last couple of weeks, has been around the Epstein files. This past weekend, Tucker Carlson actually spoke at a Turning Point USA summit, which is a right-wing youth Hitler Youth rally or something like that in Tampa. And in that, Tucker Carlson actually claimed that Jeffrey Epstein worked for Israel, trying to blackmail U.S. officials, as everyone who follows the news, and hopefully if you listen to this show, you follow that Epstein basically ran a sex trafficking ring for minors. He's probably at this point one of the most known pedophiles in the world. He committed suicide in 2019 while in jail. It's been a big issue for the right to release the Jeffrey Epstein files because there's a lot of notable officials from Wall Street and DC supposedly in it. But it also turns out that there's a lot of evidence that Trump is in there, and there's a lot of things linking Trump to Epstein, including them proclaiming to be best friends for 10 years. But Tucker Carlson really spoke to the Epstein-Israel connection where, you know, Epstein was working for Israel trying to blackmail U.S. officials. And he actually said in this Turning Point speech that every person in D.C. thinks that. And that he actually said, quote, I never met anyone who doesn't think that. I don't know any of them that hate Israel, but no one feels like they can say that Epstein didn't work for Israel. And I'm actually, we're not really into conspiracy about whether any of this is true or what have you, but it's interesting to see people on the sort of MAGA right wing, like digging in on Israel, digging in on that this thing that Trump wants people to stop talking about so much. And so I think it's just, it's an important thing to note.
I haven't followed that closely. I think there's a couple pieces. One, you have a ring of older men raping children, which is horrific. That just stands alone. And then there's the question of the political meaning of it all. And the Republicans somehow saw this as an issue that would work to their advantage because Bill Clinton and Epstein were close as well. What I don't really understand, I haven't followed it that closely, is I've seen photos of Trump and Epstein for years. This isn't new. They keep talking about an Epstein list. What they should say more appropriately is the Epstein files. There's not a list of, oh, like, he did this, he did that kind of thing. But oh, it boomeranged against them, right? They've been using this to go after Clinton, to go after Democrats. And, you know, all these tweets have resurfaced with Donald Trump Jr. and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Nancy Mace saying, oh, pedophiles, Kenny Vance, the pedophiles deserve the death penalty. And now it's, but what I never understood at the time was like, Trump was part of that. Now it's interesting because in some ways, like most Democrats, I think, don't give a damn about Bill Clinton. If Clinton gets swept up in this, I don't think anybody really cares. But it is funny that Nancy Pelosi, Queen Nancy, the queen of empty performative bullshit, came out and said that they're talking about this too much. It's a distraction. So I assume she's running cover for many of her friends. It wasn't just Bill Clinton. It was, I believe, George Mitchell was in it.
Bill Richardson.
Was a senator. Bill Richardson, the late Bill Richardson, who was governor of New Mexico.
And Clinton, so I suspect, he was Clinton's energy secretary, too.
Yeah, was Clinton. And so I suspect they're covering for their own. Right. But it's worth pursuing because I see lefty saying this is a distraction. Like, you have a ring raping children. That's not a distraction. That's real. That's a fundamental human right issue. And it does seem to have stuck a little more than most stuff does. As we said, though, before we went on, Catholic Church has been doing this for centuries and really hasn't been dented that badly, paid out some settlements, but that's about it. So you can never assume that this is going to be that big of a deal. But connected to other stuff. The problem is Trump always tries to find distractions. He's needed a lot of distractions lately. His numbers aren't doing well. On every major issue, he's underwater. I saw one poll yesterday. I don't remember who did it where he was like 59-41 disapproval. And so he's dealing with tariffs. He's dealing with inflation. He's dealing with Israel. He's dealing with Ukraine and all this other stuff. And now Epstein, you know, so distractions are now taking over from other distractions. And I think that's where, in his particular case, the risk lies. And hopefully, at this point, anything that takes the guy down, I'm all for it. Like, I'm cool with it. Get rid of him, right?
Yeah.
But it is interesting to see that this is what's causing some of them to break ranks. Marjorie Taylor Greene is really down. I mean, because we know she's a nut. And you know, in her particular case, I suspect anti-Semitism is probably real, right? But I've heard her speak a few times about Israel, and she makes sense. Like, it's cogent geopolitical and economic argument. I believe at one point she even said, we're sending, I don't know how many billions of dollars there, and they have free healthcare and education. This is Marjorie Taylor Greene. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez voted against cutting funding and is now tripping over herself on social media to explain that she didn't, right? It was kind of like the old John Kerry, I voted against it before I voted for it, or whatever. I was for it before I was against it, or the war. Yeah, that's what AOC is doing. So it's really quite remarkable that you're getting, Carlson's not an idiot like many of these people. He's a white supremacist, a violent white supremacist, but not an idiot.
Yeah.
And it's ironic to see her, him, and Marjorie Taylor Greene, who else, and who's not really a big player anymore, but who I've been following closely, who's actually been really good on a lot of this stuff, is Ron Paul.
Right.
About 20 years ago had a moment, right? He ran for president. He got a lot of publicity. He was pretty well known. A lot of kind of publicans who wanted to, what Trump would later say, drain the swamp, gravitated toward him. And he's been like consistently good for the last several months on Iran, on Israel, on government spending, on the big bill, and all this kind of stuff.
Can I say something about Ron Paul real quick? A shout out to Ron Paul. Is 20 years ago this year, I was actually in jail for doing anti-war activism in Australia, and only two U.S. politicians called the American consulate in Melbourne to know what the hell was going on. One was Ted Kennedy, and then the other was Ron Paul. Yeah. And so I just want to just put that out there, a shout out to Ron Paul.
Through common friends in Houston, we have common connections. I've spoken to him a few times, and he always invoked Dennis Kucinich as one of his like most esteemed colleagues. He really, he and Kucinich really liked each other. And whenever I talked to him and we brought up the question of Israel, he said, what are you saying now? This was 20 some years ago. He also thought that the embargo of Cuba and the boycott of Cuba was ridiculous. He's a libertarian on a lot of issues. He's a right-wing Republican, but on this stuff, he's been very good as well. Will it matter? Who knows?
But, and I want to throw out there, and I think, I don't have a very high opinion of his son who's in the Senate, but Rand Paul, who is terrible on many issues, actually on the issue of Israel, has actually been also super critical. He actually in February criticized Trump when Trump had announced that he was going to take over Gaza and own it and put up hotels because it's beautiful. He was going to turn it into the Jersey Shore or whatever. But Rand Paul came out and said that we have no business contemplating another occupation to doom our treasure and spill our soldiers' blood. And so some of it has passed down to his son.
Did Rand Paul vote against the big, beautiful bill too? Wasn't he one of the three?
He was.
And
with Tillis Collins.
I was going to say, you could also include Tom Tillis, who it reminds me of the Dylan line, looking to do one good deed before he died. Tom Tillis now has been speaking about Trump because he's decided not to run it.
It seems like he was forced out by Trump as well.
Yeah. He's going after Thomas Massie, who's another Republican apostate. So, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. The fever has not broken. So I think we could do a sidebar because we always talk about how pathetic the Democrats are. The Democrats right now are in the process. They just spent like $20 million on some kind of an evaluation of the 2024 election. And it focused on outside groups. It didn't talk about the Harris campaign or Biden or anything like that. So you're going to see where they're going as well. So that's why we're hoping the Republicans go after him, because we all know that the Democrats are spending all their time right now on the New York mayor's race rather than like the world blowing up. So
it's worth noting, just to riff off of something that you said, talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene, is that Marjorie Taylor Greene actually put up a bill to strip Israel of we give something like $3.8 billion every year in aid to the Israelis. She actually put up a bill to strip Israel of $500 million of U.S. funding, which I believe was around things like the Iron Dome. She was asking why a country in possession of nuclear weapons actually needs America to fund the Iron Dome. Only six members of the House voted for that, including her. The other Republican was Thomas Massie, he's very anti-Israel, where that's probably rooted in real anti-Semitism. But then also on the Democratic side, it was Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Summer Lee, Al Green from Houston. Green. Yeah. No AOC, no Ayanna Pressley, no Rogue Khanna.
And this is the genesis of this social media feud right now between AOC and Marjorie Taylor Greene. And honestly, Marjorie Taylor Greene's been getting the best of her for about a month now, which is really terrifying, but it says a lot about the Democratic Party. On the other hand, one big deal has come out of this, though. Trump is using this in the distraction strategy to get Mexican coke brought into the United States, right?
It's real sugar.
Everybody around here, I've been telling them, it's like, because you live there, right? In Houston, most restaurants have what they call Mexican coke. Like, if a coke is $2, Mexican coke is $4 because it has sugar instead of fructose in it. So I think people are like, I don't know if anybody really gives a damn about Mexican coke or sugar and coke, but it's going to cost twice of what Coke costs right now.
It's also important to note that when Trump announced that Coca-Cola company didn't really actually know that happened.
Yeah. I think today they said that they would start making it, manufacturing it. He's also going after the names of the Washington Commanders and Cleveland Guardians. He wants them returned to the Redskins and Indians. So he's taken on the big issues.
Right. For sure. And the other big distraction that he's really going, and part of this is he's actually trying to win back his MAGA support, is that they are now, the Justice Department actually have filed an inquiry or filed charges into Obama administration officials around Russiagate. And they're very focused on going after Obama and Biden.
Well, they had those hearings about Biden's age and senility chaired by Charles Grassley, who's 91.
Yeah.
A minute ago, you were talking about right wingers. Hasn't Nick Fuentes turned on Trump on this too, I think?
Right.
Proud Boy? What the hell was funny?
He's part of some white Christian nationalist.
Yeah, he's white. He's bad. He's like,
we've talked about the sort of most notable, like Carlson. But it's worth noting within that sort of right wing, what they call the manosphere blog universe or podcast universe or whatever, many of those right wing influencers have been like super critical, particularly around the Epstein files. And many of them have actually made their fortune off of calling for the Epstein files to be released. And so I think there was a sense of betrayal when that memo came out from the Justice Department a couple of weeks ago saying there is no Epstein there is no Epstein list. And he straight up committed suicide, even though we have tapes missing for missing a minute of. I feel like it's the JFK conspiracy people and from the right.
I was just going to bring that up, which is, I think this shows, and this is why I get so exercised over the JFK conspiracy theory, is such a dead end. It's counterproductive, right? And the whole basis of conspiracy theory is that there are good people who want to do good things, but a few bad people won't let them. And it ignores the systemic basis of all this stuff. And it's not a coincidence the JFK people for the last month or so have been in full force. And their latest horse that they're flogging is that the CIA had people assigned to surveil Oswald, right? Before they said something, right? Lee Harvey Oswald was one of the public faces of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. He was an open communist. He had defected to Russia. Like, of course people are surveilling him. What that's still like, they look for these bait and switches in order to avoid dealing with the fact that there is zero and less than zero evidence connecting whatever they consider the deep state with the assassination.
I find it particularly amusing that in those files, they talk about a CIA operative who's surveilling him. And the conspiracy people are spitting out about E. Howard Funt, who people are familiar with. He was like one of the Watergate burglary organizers. He was actually at the Bay of Pigs.
He was in Guatemala in 1954.
So that's particularly amusing. It's probably not no connection to Howard, but it's just amusing that they're all.
Excited
about it.
What we're seeing now is these conspiracy theories have the ability to really draw people in, and it's not real politics, and it's a diffusion, it's a distraction, and it really is not. It's not politics. It's anti-political because it's not focusing on the way the world actually works. There's that old famous line attributed to many people that, like, you don't need a conspiracy because the people doing these things have names and we know who they are. Well, they're CEOs, they're bank presidents, they're senators. It's like this idea that there's like an underground pizza parlor running a pedophile ring. Like, it's just so stupid. And the JFK conspiracy, which posits Kennedy as this heroic figure who was taken down because he was going to do too much good. It would be, you know, what, like Trump said, we're winning too much. That's basically what they're saying. Kennedy would have been winning. People would have gotten sick of winning. It's no different. QAnon, thankfully, the Kennedy conspiracy isn't that much different than QAnon. Thankfully, it's not as violent, right? They're not killing people and shooting people and stuff like that. But it's the same thing. And the Epstein...
They're just more like assholes on Twitter.
Yeah. Are there cover-ups? Of course there are cover-ups. There's always cover-ups. Do we have... Throughout history, have there been cases of rich and powerful oligarchic men in particular being involved in sex scandals? Yeah, there have been. Those aren't conspiracies. They're cover-ups. They are people who are, this is a dual system of justice. You know, it's like when you go to court, right? A banker will get day and some guy who shoplifts a loaf of bread will get 3 years. So we have to get away from that. Epstein involves some of the most horrific things you can imagine, raping children. And anybody who participated in that should be given the greatest penalty imaginable. But let's not pretend that this is like new or unique or that somebody's using this to take down Trump or whatever. It's a horrible crime is what it is. And it should be a criminal investigation.
Yeah, exactly. The last thing on this that I wanted to note was around the Wall Street Journal, which is, it's interesting that one of the things that emerged last week was this letter, what they're calling the body letter, between Trump and Epstein, where he said, may every day be another wonderful secret. And Trump had doodled a picture of a naked woman. And
he doesn't write pictures.
He doesn't write pictures.
He said I don't write pictures.
No, I know. But although he's like auctioned off his doodles. But it's worth noting that you didn't see that in the Washington Post. You didn't see that in the New York Times. It's still mainstream media, but it's more of the right, on the right wing side. And it's interesting. It's also the sort of mouthpiece for, you know, Wall Street and these economic overlords, which are being impacted by Trump in many ways, right? By the tariffs and the possibility of him firing Jerome Powell and things like that. I believe that caused a pretty big dip in the market when he started talking about that. And I feel like there's like some, we've talked a lot about cracks in the ruling class. I do think there's like there's an element of that going on here when you see a Murdoch-owned paper sort of release of this sensationalistic story.
I haven't heard Schumer or Jeffries talking about it, what the Wall Street Journal is and Tucker Carlson is. And so it always comes back to this, right? Every show, it's a recurrent theme, right? If there was a real opposition, you know, what might happen to the Democratic Party is like Pelosi, it's a distraction. Everything's a distraction to them. They don't want to take on anything except for the mayor's race in New York.
That's a distraction too, but it's a distraction that is a distraction that's threatening them. And maybe the mayor's race in Minneapolis before too long.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The other thing I think worth mentioning, and this is a big story, and again, a distraction, but not the essentially the cancellation of Stephen Colbert, right? I have mixed feelings about Colbert, not the biggest fan. He's had his moments in the past. Two of his most frequent guests in his old show on Comedy Central were Henry Kissinger and Doris Kearns. Plagiarism is a good one. You know, I'm not a big fan of the guy, but he has taken on Trump in his own kind of liberal, snarky, Rachel Maddow type way. And most recently, he was going off about the settlement. Paramount, under threat from Trump, agreed to give him $16 million because they have a merger pending with a company run by Larry Ellison's son.
Yeah.
Didn't Ellison run in the recall election a couple of years ago against Gavin Newsom?
It was a different one.
Oh, okay.
That was like That was like a right-wing radio host.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And this is a right-wing hedge fund man, Jerry Hoyer.
Also the one in California, he was black and this guy's white.
Oh, okay. But at any rate, the point is that Colbert called him out on that. He called it a big fat bribe. And 24 hours later, the show was canceled and CBS said it was purely a financial decision, didn't have anything to do with anything else. Trump is now going after Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon and all these other folks, right? And this is pretty scary territory, right? Because when you're doing this and when you're able to use your influence to get people like that fired, you know, and this is happening at the same time, we have these Gestapo agents in California and elsewhere wearing masks without warrants, and they're going into daycare centers and elementary schools and grocery stores and Home Depots and just literally kidnapping people. And getting a comedian sacked we're in dangerous territory here. And it's easy to say, who cares? Or it's not a big deal or it's a distraction. But when you piece these things together, it is, and we're really at a tipping point where it may not be possible to return to any level of normalcy. Is way out of the question. I don't know what you want to call it, but
for generations.
There may not be any return trip possible. It may be a one-way trip out of here.
But with the big, beautiful bill, they have exponentially upped ICE's budget. And ICE now, where their quota was 3,000 migrants arrested a day, they've just upped it to 7,000, and they're going to be targeting all sanctuary cities in the U.S.
And what's the Democrats' response? Biden deported even more. We were better at it. We did it without going into Home Depot and kidnapping people. That's their fucking response.
Yeah.
That's the Democrats' argument. We can do repression much more efficiently than you can.
It'll be kinder, more kinder and gentler.
Kinder, gentler, machine gun hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Immortal Neil Young, yeah. But on every major, Americans have turned significantly against this. What is it, like 79% now say that immigration is good for America?
And it doesn't. All of these issues that we're talking about, the American people have completely turned on Trump. They've completely turned on them. The only people less popular than Trump are the Democratic leadership, right?
Yeah.
But it's worth noting, like, only 23% of Americans think that supporting Israel is a good thing. There was a huge number of people which opposed us bombing Iran. Like you said, the immigration numbers have completely flipped on Trump. It's completely changed us in the last 3 months. And same on the economy, too.
For, almost 50 years, the Democratic Party had big majorities on abortion rights. In that period, on several occasions, they had significant majorities in the Senate and House where they could have passed some kind of law affirming abortion rights, and they never did it. Obama said it was not that important. Nancy Pelosi said it wasn't that important. And so here we are. But hey, I'm going to go out. As soon as we're done, I'm going to go out and look for a Coke with sugar in it. Yep. That's the healthy alternative.
It's also very disturbing that the voices of resistance in this moment who are getting the big platform are people that we disagree with on like fundamental issues, right? Thomas Massie, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, he's not speaking out about Epstein but Matt Gaetz has talked a lot about Israel.
Yeah.
And Iran, right? I don't think he's going to say anything about it.
Well, I think actually they're talking about Matt Gaetz being the special investigator, the special prosecutor on the Epstein files. That's a true story. That's a true story. That's been a big thing you talked about, MAGA circles. Who would know better? Who would know more?
He makes Charlie Sheen seem like saintly and demure.
Choir boy, right?
Oh, boy. Anyway, yeah, there's a lot to keep your eye out for. Will Jimmy Kimmel be next?
I think there's a couple of other observations I have here. One, the way in which Trump is so offended by the late night comedians is like shows what a fragile ego he is. Let's put that out there. And then two, the fact that the only way in which they are able to like tame power or try and get away with all this stuff is fear makes me actually think that their power in some ways is very brittle, because there's like a significant portion of Americans, like a third to half, who like sit around and hope that something bad happens to him. And so to me, that makes me think that there's a brittleness to his power, despite the fact that they're putting a whole bunch more money in.
There's fragility. Absolutely. It's not this taco bullshit, which is misused anyway, but the fact of the matter is there's an article, I forget where it appeared, not that long ago, a few weeks ago, maybe, when the protest against ICE began, Trump freaked out. He wavered because he didn't expect that. And that's when he announced that they wouldn't be going into the agricultural area.
Hotels.
Doing this and that, the service industry, the agriculture. And it was Stephen Miller who essentially grabbed Trump. I keep in my mind thinking of Don Corleone and Johnny Fontaine. I'm like, I'm not. Miller slapping Trump across the face. And when this happens, what are the Democrats doing? They're passing a resolution applauding ICE, you know, as public servants, right? No, Trump is absolutely fragile. And every day, not good for your mental health, but I wake up and the first thing I do is look at Instagram and I see these images out of California, right? Where ICE is just mauling people, terrorizing people. And then you see pictures of cops beating the shit out of motorists or whatever. But then you see these folks in California who were at hotels banging pots all night to keep the ICE people awake. And you read stories of, you know, sabotaging and monkey wrenching. You read about morale in ICE and among the National Guard there, right? This is all being done, I think, on the ground. You would know more about that than me, right? But we did talk to Enrique Ochoa a few weeks ago. This is being done by communities locally. They've been doing this for quite some time, right? It doesn't require the Democratic Party. It's not involving Gavin Newsom. It's not involving Karen Bass. It's certainly not involving Nancy Pelosi or King Jeffries or Charlie Schumer or anybody like that.
Dan Laurie here locally in San Francisco.
Right. And this is what's required, right? We can't continue to have these debates about the midterms or let's form a new party or of the Greens or whatever. Like the hour is late and the stakes are far too high to be pissing around. And what these people are doing is exactly, and you're going to see it in Chicago now. Chicago is a well-organized community.
New York too.
Chicago is every bit as organized and maybe more radical actually than New York and San Francisco. And the other day in Warren, Ohio, I went, you know, the Good Trouble thing, the John Lewis thing or something like that. In Warren, Ohio, and this area is pretty crazy red anymore, but I was really surprised. Like every minute, cars were going by, honking their horns, giving thumbs up and stuff like that. So there's a real kind of a turbulence, which is roiling up right now. And, you know, we can't wait for the Democrats or the unions to organize this and take control of it centrally. If they did, they would just destroy it anyway. They would co-opt and preempt it. And so that's where your hope comes from. You got to find it. You got to find a little hope, yep. No matter what.
Yep. I wake up and look at Instagram every day and think about all those courageous people in LA and now in Ventura County who are completely fighting back. It's increasingly happening here in the Bay Area as well. And with them upping the ICE budget, we're going to be seeing this happen in so many other blue states. Anyway, he's not going to be causing as much trouble where his base is, but we're going to be seeing it in sanctuary cities, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Anyway,
there's one last thing that we wanted to sort of name, which is today we lost an iconic figure in rock and roll who also had really good politics, and that is Ozzy Osbourne. A couple of years ago, we actually did a show on pop culture in the 80s and talked with Andrew Hunt about a variety of things, but including like music. And so Ozzy Osbourne actually was really well known and outspoken on particularly around Cold War politics and issues around war and peace and things like that. Two notable songs just to put out there are War Pigs and A Crazy Train. And so Ozzy passed away today at the ripe old age of 76, like 3 weeks after he did his farewell concert. And I'll just put it out there. Ozzy probably lived a lot of lives, right? There's a lot of hard living with Ozzy. If you watch that reality show that he was on 2 decades ago, The Osbournes, you could see it, right? You couldn't just see it. You could really see it. So Ozzy, the fact that he actually did one last show at the age of 76, I do have to say respect to that. But just want to put out, like, rest in power, Ozzy Osbourne. I don't know if you have anything you want to add about Ozzy, but going off the rails on this crazy train is, like, still really speaks to me.
I got to say, a few months ago, I think when the Irish band Kneecap got in trouble for Palestine, Sharon Osbourne said that these acts shouldn't be put, like, you have mansions because of War Pigs. War Pigs is a great song. One day, that reminded me, a couple years ago, I'm walking. It's kind of overcast, bleak day in Ohio. And I'm walking literally through a cemetery, and I hear a car with the radio blaring, and it was a young kid playing War Pigs. And I thought, okay, maybe we got a shot at surviving this shit. Pour out a 40 for Oz.
Yeah, well, let's pour out a 40 for Ozzy. And on that note, because I want to go out celebrating something, so I want to celebrate Ozzy. You've been listening to the Silky Smooth Sounds of the Green and Red podcast. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. And if you are listening to this on an audio platform, please give us a rate and review. And then if you really like us, go to greenredpodcast.org and hit that support button, or become a patron at patreon.com/greenredpodcast. And we're going to be back now that I'm back from vacation and Bob is on a big vacation. We're gonna be having a whole lot more episodes coming your way. Some exciting stuff too. We'll be organizing a panel in the fall, another panel in the fall too. So
the big vacation, heading off into the big sleep.
Oh, like 30 years.
Don't wish that on me, man.
Hey, folks, make a lot of trouble and misbehave.